From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The details of a brutal rape and murder of an 8-year-old girl named Asifa in Kashmir, India, have sparked mass protests across the country. The young girl from a nomadic Muslim family in the Kathua district of the contested state of Kashmir was found to have been kidnapped, drugged, and raped by several men, including minors, over several days before being strangled to death. Indians across the nation have taken to the streets demanding justice for Asifa. It isn't the first time that the report of a horrific rape has shocked the nation and galvanized action. We go now to India to speak with Jayashree Bajoria. She is the author of the Human Rights Watch report, Everyone Blames Me, about sexual violence in India. Welcome to the program, Jayashree.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So first, let's get a little bit into what happened to this little girl. She was 8 years old. Unfortunately, these sorts of things do happen fairly regularly. This particular incident, however, seems to have been investigated and details released to the public. Why is that? Why was this specific rape and murder of this child one that has gotten so much attention?
The case in Kathua, this 8-year-old girl, Asifa Bano, is particularly horrific. And, you know, the charge sheet was released by the police on Monday. And the charge sheet gives the chilling details which show why this particular case has also led to such outrage in India. The premeditated how this was actually planned in order to terrorize a particular community, to drive them away from that area, and the actions of the police, in the case, first the very involvement of two police officers in the crime itself, and then two other police officers who actually sort of try to cover up the evidence which the charge sheet lays out. The other bit that we saw that, political leaders from the ruling party tried to shield perpetrators, where the police tried to shield perpetrators. There were rallies that were taken out in favor of the accused using the national flag. And last week, when the police, when finally the investigation was taken over by another police team, and when they tried to file charges, this was a case that happened in January, and last week when the police tried to enter the court to file the charges in court, the lawyers physically prevented the police from filing the charges, and the police had to call back up to be able to do this. And this has really shocked the nation, in particular in how blatant the shielding of the perpetrators of sexual assault has been, besides the horrific nature of the crime itself.
Why are the accused rapists being defended publicly? This was something unexpected. I understand the families of the accused rapists and the even the local chapter of the Bharatiya Janata Party in the area, Hindu Ekta Manch, have held rallies to in defense of the accused.
Right, and in this case in Kathua, this is particularly shocking. But this, the shielding of powerful perpetrators is not new in India. We have often found that police continue to shield powerful perpetrators in sexual violence cases, especially if they are politically connected and if the victims comes from a socially or economically marginalized community. Even the police often try to delay the filing of the complaints. And even though now, the laws in India actually criminalize that action, police officials who do not file complaints of sexual violence cases can go to prison for up to 2 years. But there is no case that I know of where, this section, this provision, and actually has actually been applied against a police officer, even though there are instances that this has happened. And often police will, in some of these cases, we will find that the police will try to put pressure on the victim and the victim's family to compromise or settle the case.
Now, you mentioned earlier that the rape was, in a way, intended to push out a particular community. So let's explore that a little bit. So essentially, this young girl came from a family of nomadic Muslims living in Kashmir, in Kathua district in Kashmir. And as far as you can tell from the details that have been revealed about this incident, the brutality of the crime against this girl, was it intended to sort of terrorize the entire community so that they wouldn't continue to, you know, forage in the area and graze their animals and they would sort of leave?
That is what the police charge sheet details, yes.
Yeah. So how has this been, how have people within Kashmir responded? Has there been a sort of uniting of Hindus and Muslims, setting aside the family members of the accused rapists? Have there been, have people come together and said, this is unacceptable?
Yes, across India, there have been protests in support of the victim's family, calling for justice in Kathua, and not just Kathua, in fact, but also there was another case recently in Unnao, in Uttar Pradesh, where a 17-year-old girl was allegedly has accused a BJP leader of raping her. And there, you know, what happened after they tried to file the complaint, you know, her father was apparently beaten up and then actually arrested by the police and then died in police custody. So that too actually has really, you know, has shown that in sexual violence cases, still we find that there are serious gaps in implementation, even though India has made significant progress in terms of legal reforms and other reforms since the 2012 gang rape and killing of Jyoti Singh Pandey in Delhi.
That was the 2012 case that first sort of came on the international scene, where Indians were outraged by a very brutal rape of a woman on a bus in Delhi, right?
Yes. So in December 2012, Jyoti Singh Pandey was gang raped and died. And that led to widespread protests across the country and call for stricter laws and better response from the criminal justice system for survivors of sexual assault in India. And the Indian government, in fact, adopted these legal and significant other reforms. But almost 6 years later now, we find that there are serious gaps in actually implementation. There are no monitoring and accountability mechanisms. We still find that the survivors have, like when they try to access the criminal justice system, it can still become a nightmare for them, as we saw in Kathua and Unnao. And these recent cases have really brought people back on the streets, calling for justice in these cases, but more generally, talking about, again, the fact that there is injustice in sexual violence cases. So there were protests in Delhi and Bombay, and they're going to be in Calcutta and several other cities where citizens have come out, students, activists have come out, children have come out, men and women and children have come out to call for justice. We've also seen, apparently there was crowdsourced funding for legal aid for the victim's family in Kathua, and they have received significant support from citizens across the country. So this has again sparked protests similar to what we saw in 2012, but this time there is that we've moved, you know, in terms of laws, but where is the implementation?
Right. And actually, let's get to the issue of the implementation. As you said, the issue is there is a lot of corruption, that when victims go to the police, they may be re-victimized all over again. You did a report, Everyone Blames Me, that I'd like to discuss, because this isn't just about Asifa or about the young woman in 2012, Jyoti. This is about a very systemic issue in the world's largest democracy, right? This is an issue that seems to also cross religious lines. The girl in Kashmir was Muslim. The 2012 victim was Hindu. It seems as though rape and sexual violence against women cuts across religious lines, and the issue of corruption and lack of police accountability seems to be the one of the things that continues to let this keep happening, right?
Yeah, sexual violence against children and women is a serious issue. One positive change that we have seen in India since 2012 is that far more women and girls are willing to come out and speak about this, despite the culture of victim blaming. We are seeing sort of a breaking of silence around this issue, and that is significant. And yet we find that the criminal justice system, at every point in the criminal justice system, these survivors who have shown the courage to come out and speak out are not being supported the way the reforms that were put in place envisaged. So whether it's at the point in the police station where they go to report the crime, whether it's in the hospitals when their medical examination happens, or any sort of medical care, health care, follow-up care that they require, in the courts, legal aid, compensation, all of these, each of these elements, we find that there are serious gaps. And a lot of it has to do with lack of monitoring mechanisms being put in place to ensure that, victims are supported the way they should be.
Now, so there's the issue of police, obviously, but isn't there also a cultural shift that needs to take place within India, a larger cultural shift? I've noticed that in the photos of protesters that have been demanding justice for Asifa, there's a lot of what seems to be reactionary calls for the death penalty. You know, hang the rapists, just they're guilty, toss them away, destroy them, and somehow that will address these injustices. But is that really the answer? Doesn't India need to have a reckoning about misogyny and sexual violence and why these things continue to happen?
There can be no shortcuts. There can be no shortcuts, whether it's from the political leaders or whether it's from the society as a whole. What we need is the government to do the hard work of now actually making sure that these laws are enforced, that there is training at every level of police, of doctors, of magistrates, of judges, of making sure that, you know, all of the support services, whether it's legal aid, whether it's compensation, these are actually reaching the survivors in a time-bound and adequate manner, effective manner as it's required. And, you know, while changing mindsets will take time, a lot of this has to be done now and has to be done effectively.
What are some of the ways in which the government is showing it is responsive, or is it even showing that it's responsive? You mentioned earlier that there was a rape that a BJP leader was accused of, the Bharatiya Janata Party, which is the ruling party. This is the party of Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Has that party, a Hindu fundamentalist party that has, you know, sometimes seems to imply that the sanctity of cows is greater than the sanctity of human life. Has this party and its leadership done enough to show that it is tackling this issue?
Prime Minister Narendra Modi and the BJP have spoken out against sexual violence at many times, and have actually spoken out quite strongly about addressing this issue. like I said, what is required is to actually do the hard work. Many of these reforms have been put on paper, but what good are they on paper? They have to be implemented.
So there's a lot of rhetoric, but not enough policy implementation.
Yes, there are a lot of laws and policies on paper. And like I said, it has resulted in more women and girls coming and speaking out about this. There is an increase in reporting of the crimes. What we are not seeing is that the criminal justice system actually responding to these cases in a more effective, in a more supportive manner.
And this is, of course, a larger systemic issue. India's criminal justice system is sort of notorious for moving extremely slowly on all issues. And so it makes it very hard for, criminal justice to even move forward in general, right?
And it's not just speed, it's sensitization as well, right? When how police respond to these, victims and victims' families when they come to report it, even how doctors respond to them. For instance, in the health sector, there is still something called the two-finger test that continues, which is, doctors basically doing examinations on these rape survivors to make derogatory conclusions such as they are habituated to sex. And this has been ruled out. This has been something that has been condemned by the Supreme Court. There are now medical legal guidelines by the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare that was put in 2014. And yet we find that in hospital after hospital, government hospitals, doctors are still conducting these tests. And this is cruel and inhumane that can end up re-traumatizing these survivors and have absolutely no scientific value, and yet they are being done. Often the therapeutic care for these survivors is completely missing. Follow-up care, counseling, all of that there are serious gaps in the healthcare for these survivors as well. And then, even in the courts, often you will find that the language used, still will continue to have a certain amount of victim blaming.
Well, Jayashree, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website where people can read the reports that you and others have written for Human Rights Watch.
Yes, they can go to Human Rights Watch, Human Rights Watch website, which is www.hrw.org. All these reports will be available on the India page of the website. We also have the website now. The India page is also available in Hindi for the Hindi readers, and they can also access the entire report and videos and various other elements in Hindi.
And we'll post a direct link to your report, Everyone Blames Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest is Jayashree Bajoria. She is the author of the Human Rights Watch report, Everyone Blames Me, about sexual violence in India. We've been discussing the case of Asifa, the 8-year-old girl in Kashmir, and the general issue of sexual violence in India. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.